Okay, I want to say Chodesh Tov to everyone in front of me and Chodesh Tov around the world. Today is Monday, April 23rd, 2012. We're in the middle of Das Torah. I just want to respond to some questions. Number one, a correction. I quoted Eliashiv Reichner, who wrote the book of Rav Amital, and I called him a Talmud of Rav Amital. According to Rabbi Grunstein, he learned in the Gush only for a year, and afterwards he studied in Yeruchim with Rav Blumenzweig. I have grandsons who study there too, and that's a Talmud of a Talmud of Rav Amital and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. So I make a minor correction for the sake of intellectual honesty. A lot of people have written to me from Canada, from Shari Chesed in Yerushalayim, and elsewhere. A bombshell was just dropped in the latest issue of commentary. It turns out that one of the key people involved with commentary, and here a very interesting individual, wait, I just want to get his name. I've read some of his writings. Let's just see. I don't see a name here. Can anyone give me the name? He's written. He wrote the volume about Israel, the emergence of the economy here. One second. No, I don't see his name here. And real chiddush to me, bombshell by the Rav. Anyway, this individual deals with the Rav's philosophy, and he claims that a lot of people have made the mistake of dealing with the Rav from essays that were published after his death, not edited by him, some of them not written, recorded by others. I'm talking about, what's the name of the individual from, Yoram Chazani. Yoram Chazani, that's who I'm talking about. Yoram Chazani. Recognize the name? He's a graduate of the Gush commentary, and he has both a perfect English, a command of English, and a command of Hebrew, equally good, I'm told. Having lived in, I believe it's Israeli Bamako, but spent formative years in the United States. And in this article, everyone is shocked. And I just want to make one comment to give you insight. If you read the article, you'll see that in the introduction, he talks about the fact that, as I just said a minute ago, everyone makes a mistake. They're misquoting the Rav because they're not quoting from what he actually wrote. But I'm going to quote from what he actually wrote. And he quotes from a volume that was published by the Torah Taraf Foundation, The Emergence of Ethical Man. And the way he quotes from it, the bombshell is that the Rav speaks in terms of this world, and everything is this world, and continuity is Am Yisrael. The Yachid doesn't die, it continues, and his children, his grandchildren. And the implication being that there's much less of a stress on eternity and Olam Haba, and everything that forms part of a religious mentality. So, and everyone asked me about this, and I hear people talking in the Shtivlach about it, so I want to tell you that Yoram Chazani has fallen into the exact trap that he accuses others. And it's very simple. I'm familiar with The Emergence of Ethical Man. It's an unfinished manuscript. Nobody knows why the Rav wrote it. Was it a book, or were they lectures? The chances are that these were lectures in Bernard Revel Graduate School. Now, it just so happens that there are a few lectures floating around from the early 50s and that the Rav gave in Bernard Revel Graduate School. What's amazing is the Rav's command of English. In the early 50s, he was still he wasn't even in America 20 years, let's say. His command of English is unbelievable. His command of philosophy, but you see that the Rav's thrust was against Christian theology, particularly Catholic theology. If you view the emergence of ethical man, and remember, we don't know where he gave these lectures. We don't know if they were lectures. We don't know if they were a book. The book was unfinished. It was edited by a professor in Emory University, if I'm not mistaken. It was finished by this professor. It was a Talmud of Brody. I don't know the name of him, but you can check it. It was a Talmud of...
The guy in the South.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's in Atlanta, Georgia. And what the Rev is doing in the emergence of ethical man,
Michael Brown
is the name? Thank you. Okay. It's a similar name to Brody, that I remember. And you got to remember, I haven't held this book in my hand for quite a few years now. It's not that I horror it already. Not that I sense. It says so in the introduction. They found this manuscript. No one knows what it was. No one knows what it was. No one knows lectures. Because the Rev lectured also by reading a manuscript, basically. But it's obvious to me that the whole purpose of the emergence of ethical man was to negate and abrogate Christian theology. And that's why the Rev put so much stress on Olam Hazeh. Because those of you familiar with Christian theology in general and Catholic theology befrat, in particular, the stress is on outer worldliness, the stress is on eternal life, the whole Christian theology, going to the Protestantism and predetermination, Dante's Inferno, which the Rav Dafka quotes in even the emergence of ethical matter. I heard him in the lecture in Bernard Revel. So that's the way I would approach this volume. It's an unfinished sympathy. It's only part of the Rav's philosophy. Now, the truth is that I've assimilated a good deal of this. If you go back to Washington, where I tell you the drasha I gave in the army about the individual in Klal Yisrael, that is a slap in the face of all of Christianity. As I've said 1,000 times over, Christians can kill Christians, and it's no problem whatsoever. Alsace-Lorraine, French versus Germans. What's it called? The Folk Islands, Argentina versus Britain, right? Folkland, what's it called? Folklands, I think, plural. And they're ready to go to war again, if you know what's going on. We Jews have a concept of Am Yisrael. The Goyim don't have this. So the Rav develops that idea here, but it doesn't mean there's no Olam Haba. It doesn't mean I only live on through my children, my grandchildren. We believe, of course, in eternal. Anyway, that's my take. And I wouldn't get overly excited. A bombshell dropped, a bombshell of an unfinished manuscript. If the Rav would finish it and tell us what his intentions were, who he was giving it to. But in that period in his life, there is no question that the Rav's philosophical thrust, meaning when he got involved with philosophy, again, I refer you to the article by Tova Lichtenstein, which I have here. There's no question that Tova's piece on the Rav now is monumental. And you have to read it and read it well and read the footnotes and see beyond what she's written. And it's monumental. And I have to give Tova all the credit in the world because she takes issue with some of her own family and some of the Rav's top Talmidim. And she tells it as it is. But there's no question that the Rav's philosophical contact at that time was anti-Christian theology. He was still under the influence of Berlin, of what was happening in the world when he studied under the giants of philosophy at the University of Berlin. Now, by the 60s into the 70s, you can already see the Rav dealing with contemporary issues. His philosophical thrust is very different. He's influenced already by the New York Times, the problems of loneliness, the individual, the human being, the human being's role in creation, prayer, the efficacy of prayer. These are issues that come up much later when we're all part. In other words, the Europäische, the greenhorn, the Talmud of the Rav in the 70s is no longer the Talmud of the 50s. In the 50s, 80% of the students were second generation. And if I'm making a mistake, it's 85%. Second generation, either survivors or refugees that ran away in the late 30s. And this was the second generation. By the 70s, the Rav was teaching already. Kids were assimilated into America, assimilated into the American culture. You don't know what the New York Times meant. The Rav quoted the New York Times with awe. When you wanted to speak of Rav Moshe Feinstein and show who Rav Moshe is, everyone would say, and every morning he read the New York Times with his cup of coffee. This is absolutely true. And the Rav had to deal with these problems that these youngsters were raising. So there's a different thrust. You don't find the Rav so involved with prayer and the individual, but you do find basic theology, anti-Christian, anti-Catholic, etc., etc. Okay, anyway, that's my take. Excuse me? Yeah.
And the Rav studied with these people. And the truth, even what you're saying is partly correct, and not, I would differ, because at the end, the individual is an essential thing. In other words, it isn't what did Hashem want, it's how do I, as an individual, relate to it? Because the existentialism is always looking from the perspective of the person.
Okay, but as much as you talk about looking at the perspective of the person, but there's in Yahadut and Torah, the concept of Am Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael, Adat Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, this becomes extremely important. And as time marches on, the Rav is much more devoted to these themes than the individual. And it's a reflection of what's happened with the Jews, with the post-Holocaust, with America, with the State of Israel. Tov is very good on this, with the State of Israel. You have to see that footnote there. And this is the way I view the Rav. Again, I don't like philosophy. I've said it many times. I love Shas and Paiskim and learning and Jewish history. I like something mamushistic, that tangible, that I can dig into. The Rav also had an entire philosophic thrust. Being a Talmud of the Rav, whatever I know about philosophy, I know for what the Rav got me interested in. But there's no question that the Rav's philosophic structure also bordered on Darshanut and homiletics. And you cannot forget that. And many times he took simple philosophic ideas and he turned it around with Darshanut, something unbelievable. Okay, I also want to mention the Shaila that came up yesterday in class. I remember I did look into Goldman and I did look into the Siddur and I looked in again, and there is not one word on whether the Rav said Uvalitzion, the Kedusha, aloud at night. Not one syllable. So we still don't know who is right, who is wrong, and let it stand on what I said yesterday. Okay, now we're going into heavyweight material. There's no question that the Das Torah is an invention basically of the 20th century, more specifically post-World War II. Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Amital, Mira survivors, Rav Amsalan, who is in the news, everyone says they never heard of the word of Das Torah. Rav Amsalan, of course, is even more forthright that the Ashkenazic Rabbonim invented this concept to control the people. Be it as it may, Emunat Chachomim, yes, Das Torah, we never heard about. What's so dangerous about Das Torah? And here you can develop a whole concept that a Rebbe is never wrong, a Rebbe is infallible. If we speak about Judaism and Christianity, the word infallibility can never, ever be mentioned when it comes to a human being. And God forbid that we should compare a human being to the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is the height of apikorsus, the height of avodah zarah, the height of avodat atzmi. I don't have to tell you with Chabad and all that happened after the Rebbe died, a lot of good happened, but we can't dismiss the Messianics. And within the Messianics, you have people who literally believe that the Rebbe was part of the Godhead. I don't even want to articulate it. And you all know the chief rabbi of Tzfat was killed. A Jew killed another Jew. Rabbi Yitzhak Levi Bogomilsky was run down by a Lubavitcher who was mad at him because he didn't become a messianic and didn't believe that the Rebbe was some form of the Godhead. And he ran him down and he died. They suffered months and it's a tragedy. And the person who ran him down is in jail. And you know, you want to know something? People go to jail, they're the happiest people alive. It's like a hotel. They have room and board and food and they're occupied and they can work and earn a little money. And sickies, they're people who don't want to come out of jail. They've been there 10 years, 20 years. Who knows where this guy is and what state of mind he is in jail. And he killed another Jew. And I don't have to tell you what goes on in 770. The fighting, the fist fighting, the screaming, the cursing, it's extremely dangerous. And now I want to show you black and white, and this is why I left off the class last week. And with all my awe and reverence, and there's a young man here, Yosef Chaim, who missed yesterday's shiur when he started the shiur four times over. Has anyone told you that or not? Baruch Hashem, a lot of people have told you. Okay, I'm not asking questions. A father of children is busy and maybe his wife needed to be relieved, so I understand it very well. But with all due awe for Rabbi Ovadia, do I differ with this shiva. And that's the story I told you. I came out of the elevator in this very building. It has to be the late 70s, early 80s. And the students, you know, and college kids love a Rebbe, respect the Rebbe. It's not that your age, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're trying to convert me. I'm not trying. I give up. I'm not trying to convert you. I get you already. You've had every Rebbe in the world. You're finishing your whole career in study. I'm lucky. Some of you are angry at me. I don't have a beard. Others are upset. I don't wear a black hat. Some of you probably feel I should have a gatel, whatever. But you know, college kids, you've influenced them. They love you. They want to show respect. And I come out of the elevator, Su Sharim Rasheichem, Vayavol Pitchei Olam. And I was so upset. How do you sing that about a mortal? So they show me the tshuva of Rav Ovadia, and I dafka knew the tshuva. I told it to you, I quoted to you last week, right? Last time we met. Yechavadat, Chelik Shlishi, Siman Ayin Gimel. And these are tshuva that he recorded. We recorded from the radio. He would be asking Rav Ovadia. I have recordings of Rav Ovadia from the early 70s that I recorded from the radio. I mean, to listen to Rav Ovadia, you got to get used to his Hebrew. It's not Ashkenazic Hebrew. It's not Israeli Hebrew. It's what's it? Iraqi Hebrew. Iraqi Hebrew. It's like Yishai, Eli Yishai. If anyone understands his Moroccan Hebrew, stand up. I don't think there's anyone in this class. I understand Hebrew. I understand English, but when Eli Yishai is speaking, I got to listen with 3 years. Boy, oh boy. So I got used to Rav Ovadia. And all that he said, they recorded and published in Yechavadat. And he deals with this question, and it's very frightening. The examples he gives, I believe I quoted to them last time, but just let me quote it again. He describes from Chaim Palachi, who we quoted last night, that Reb Chaim Palachi speaks about his grandfather, Avinu Malkeinu. Could you imagine Avinu Malkeinu? That's the way you speak about your grandfather. And there are other quotes from Sfadik Rabbanim. The way they speak of Gedolei Yisrael, it is absolutely frightening. But Rav Ovadia develops the idea that since the Talmud Chacham, a Rebbe, a Rav, represents the Shechina, since we stand up for the Shechina, since the Gemara, I gave all the sources last time, the Gemara in Kedushin, that the Amoraim used to stand up when their mother is entering, the Shechina is entering. Frightening. Now, take a look at that Gemara that Rav Ovadia plays with, how he interprets it, and how I would interpret it, and how Rashi interprets it. And that's the famous Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Amud Aleph. We left off last time right with this Gemara. Again, Shabbat Lamed Amud Aleph, where it describes Shlomo HaMelech is trying to get the gates to open to the Beit HaMikdash. They want to consecrate it, and the gates do not open. The gates remain locked. Kishabana Shlomat Beit Hamikdash Bikesh Lachnis Oren Lebeit Kodshei Kadoshim Dafku Sharim Zebezah. And Shlomo doesn't know what to do. We start saying Mizmorei Tchilim, and he reaches Chaf Dalet, and he says, Hu Sharim Sheikhem V'yinotchu Pietchei Olam V'yavo Melech Chavod. And Rashi learns Pshat that everyone thought Shlomo HaMelech was saying about himself, I'm quoting Rashi, the Al-Atzmo Oma Melech HaKavod. And at that moment, the world was shaking. They wanted to eat him up alive. And then finally he corrected himself and said, no, it's not about me. Me who's a Melech HaKavod. Hashem Tzvakot Hu Melech HaKavod Selah. My dear students, the simple pshat in the Gemara is Chas v'chalila, we should say something which might let people to believe we are talking about ourselves, that we're comparing ourselves to God. Wow. And I'll show you. It's an open Gemara. Bracha Daf Chav Zayin Amid Aleph, continuing on Chav Zayin Amid Bet. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Liolam, Al Yitpalel Adom, Lo Keneged Rabbo, Velo Acharei Rabbo. No, what does this mean? Look into Rashi. Look into Tosfot. Lo Keneged Rabbo? Very simple. Could you imagine the Rabbis davening Mincha? And Yitzchak and I stand next to him as if we're his equals. Oh boy, what chutzpah on our part. No, what's wrong if you stand right in back of the Rav and Davin? Look into Tosfot. It appears as if you are mishtachaveh, you are bowing to your Rebbe. That's exactly the problem. Chas v'chalila, you should turn a bus of a dumb into an Elil. This is Catholicism. This is Christianity. This is not Torah Hashem. This is idol worship. The greatest gadol is still a bus of a dumb. Ain't tzadik b'yaretz asher yachta v'yaseh kulo tov. And unfortunately, that refers to the greatest gadolim you can name. I don't want to spell it out. I'll get there in a few minutes, and I still won't spell it out because I love Gedolei Yisrael. I love Talmidei Chachamim. But we're all mortals. We're all humans. Chas v'chalila to sing from mortal. Zu sharim rasheichem v'yavob pitchei olam v'yavob zemelech hakavod. Wow. Something very fascinating. Take it one step further. I got an email from a student who sat in the kollel a few years ago, wonderful young man from London in business. I see here his email reads, he has a phone number here in India. I don't know exactly what it means to phone him in India, but he must have business there. And he's in banking when I last spoke with him. So he just finished Washington, and he said he's starting it all over again, and he has four questions. I answered three, and I said the fourth I'll discuss in class. And it's unbelievable the question he asks, the mistake he makes, and the answer is right here in this shayur. Question number four. Remember, I have an unbelievable description. Anyone who was in the yeshiva in my time, a little afterwards, before, they say, ach, did you hit the nail on the head? We had a very colorful Rosh Yeshiva. In my days in yeshiva, there was the Rav and Rav Yeruchim Yerelik. All stories around the yeshiva centered on these two individuals. All the other Rebbeim were stars in the firmament. But the Rav was the sun, and Rav Yeruchim was the moon. And I told you the story, I write it up, it's an unbelievable story, how Rav Yeruchim in one shiur started ripping apart Rabbi Belkin, and Rabbi, you know, Rabbi Belkin, and it's a point, and he built, and this, and that. You want to know who built Torah? Rav Huttner. Das heißt Gebäude. Chaim Berlin. Beautiful. A few weeks later, a kid, very innocently, and remember, it was a different America then, a different world. There was constant social contact, social intercourse, back and forth. Chaim Berlin, Teira Vidas, Yitzchak Kochan, and we had students, actually, who went back and forth, mainly coming to YU. I can give you a whole list of names of Chaim Berlin boys and Teira Vidas boys who came uptown to Yeshiva Simchas Kochanan. And we knew what was going on. And a kid quoted Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner said something, and evidently Rav Gorelick, you know, Rav used to give these shiurs that formed the basis of Pachad Yitzchak. He was very unique in it, in Machshava, very, very unique. And someone quoted Rav Huttner, and Rav Yeruchim went ballistic. Huttner, Shmei, Bei, Anamarit, Amu, Aveneni, Yerechei, Pum, Pum. Guy, unbelievable. That was Rav Yeruchim. Remember him or not, or in your time already. When they switched to English, they ended Torah in America. That was the end. The Rav ended Torah America the day that I was sitting right here and Danny Grant is standing there. It's September 1960. And Danny says to the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, you hold back Torah from us. You don't allow us to study with you. What do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand Yiddish. Tomorrow this year will be in English and I'll give you an exam. And Greer says, fine, good. Well, finished the shiur. Abba Branchbigger was fainting, didn't understand the word of the Rav's English. And Danny Greer comes over. Rebbe, I'm ready for the exam. You understood? Good. I'm too tired to do anything more today. That was it. The end of Torah at that moment. So we didn't know what to do with Rabbi Yeruchim. So I tell the story. We waited until Shabbos. And we went over where he davened in his shul. He had a shul. Mount Eden was the center of Yiddishkeit. There were many shuls there. Another shul, he had a shul in Beth Miriam, in the yeshiva building, whatever that, Zichron Moshe building. Beth Miriam had a shul. And we went over after Mincha Shabbos, and he said, Rabbi, we don't understand. Then we found out the story. Oh boy, we found out the story. And the story is very simple. His eldest son, Reb Chaim Meisel, was no longer alive. I could say he was a Rosh Yeshiva up in South Fallsburg. His eldest son, named for Reb Chaim Meisel Grishinsky, needed a high school. All the other Murahs sent their kids to MTA. But Reb Yeruchim Gorelick should send his children to MTA. Reb Weinstein sent his kids. Reb Fishman sent his kids. Reb Yeruchim, he had a look. He went looking Teira Vidas. He went looking RJJ. He liked Chaim Berlin. That's when he praised Rav Huttner. Now he has to make a meeting with Rav Huttner to get the kid in and arrange everything, you know, the finances. It's going to be a big cover for Rav Huttner. Rabbi Yochanan Gorelick's eldest son is coming to Chaim Berlin. And he goes in and he meets with the Rosh Yeshiva and he walks out. And the Gabayim at the door grab Rabbi Yeruchim, the Rosh Yeshiva. This is not the way you walk out. And they made him go back in and walk out backwards. Yaakov, if you understand the Litvische Welt, if you understand Rav Yeruchim, to walk backwards from Rav Huttner, this is dropping a hydrogen bomb. That was the end of Rav Huttner. And I write it up in the book. So you know what he writes to me? It's unbelievable. This is a mistake, Min HaShemayim. The story about Rav Kotla, who insisted that people walk backwards away from him, is this not based on a Gemara in Baba Basra around Daf 100? Gentlemen, this is the heart of it. Rav Kotla, it could never, ever happen. I spoke with Rav Aaron in Yechidit. I went into... I lived in Lakewood. I'm not telling you fairy tales. No one from the Lakewood crowd has said, this book is fiction. I claim my description of Baron Cutler is the nicest description that has been written by anybody. Read it. Washington to Washington, Lakewood, Reb Aaron. Got a lot from Lakewood, a lot from Reb Aaron. Take my word for it. But first of all, my dear students, I don't know what Gemara and Baba Batra is talking about. It's an open Gemara in Yuma, Daf Nun Yimel Amud Aleph. Check it out. The Gemara talks about how you leave the Beis HaMikdash. Ephraim will testify that every Friday night we walk out from the Kotel backwards for Dalet Amot. Right or wrong, Ephraim? Absolutely. And I didn't pay him to agree. He walks out backwards with me. All right, that's an open Gemara. Makom HaMikdash. So the Gemara does continue. V'chein Talmid Chacham HaNiftah Mirabo Lo Yagzir Panav V'yelech Ela Mitzadeid Panav V'holeich K'chodem Eliezer K'chavi Miftah Mineid Reb Yochanan K'ch Have. So it is an open Gemara. Be a little bit careful how you explain the Gemara, but the pshat is you walk out not backwards. The Gemara uses the word, and the Achronim already say this. You walk out sort of midway. Not backwards, but not totally facing your Rebbe. It's covered. It's diffidence. It's like the Halacha Haseba. No, what's the Halacha Haseba? You have to ask Rishut from your Rebbe. If you're at your Rebbe's table and you're the Seder and you want to be Meisev, you have to ask the Rebbe's Rishut. It's considered arrogance on your part if you don't have the Rebbe's permission. All right, you can check out the Halacha. I can give you this. I don't want to do it because it's not germane to what I want to say. But it's Hilchat Talmud Torah in the Rambam. It's Perikei Halacha Vav. I looked it up. And I worked out the Shulchan Aruch, it's Yoredeya, Siman Reish Mem Bet, of course, Se'if Tet Zion. So you'll see there's a tendency among the Nosei Kelim to minimize this Lacha, to minimize it so that ultimately you could see that the Gedolei Yisrael were very unhappy with this concept. Walk out backwards? You walk out backwards from the Beis HaMikdash? You walk out backwards from the Makom HaKodesh? You walk out backwards from the Har HaMoriah? But to walk out backwards from a bus of Adam? So you'll see, number one, it's not backwards. It's Stadim, the way the Gemara says. More than that, it's your Rebbe Muvhak. And it has to be your Rebbe Muvhak. Shalimdu Kol HaTorah. Now, you come down to Rav Kotla and Rav Hutna, this is exactly the conflict, 100%. Say what you want about Rav Aaron Kotla. From the time he entered his early 20s, he never changed. There was a period in his life, and everyone talks about it, and Rakefet is a wise aleck when he tells you, no, Art Scroll has biographies on all the American Gedolim. The most important American Gadol who changed all of Torah, including YU. Things are happening in YU at this minute. That's a direct result of Reb Aaron Kotla. I fainted yesterday in the office when they showed me the new program. You saw the new program? You come back from Israel, you take a full year off in America, just sit and learn. YU, no college. Just sit and learn. New program. Spoke it over with Malka. We both said the Rav would have an epileptic attack if he could see what's going on today. For 1 year. In other words, and I said, who's this program geared for? I asked my Talmud, Josh. I said, Josh, who's this program geared for? Kids who have learned 2 years in Israel, they're coming back to America because their parents are forcing them. You know, come get a college degree. They still don't want to leave. So for 1 year, it's like a deep coming down from a deep dive. You have to go into a decompression chamber. Am I right, doctor? Give it to me right. Hadassah is famous. Not Hadassah. Haifa General is famous. It has, because it's right on the ocean, it has the best chambers or equipment to help people, chas v'chalila, who have this problem or have come up from deep dive, lack of oxygen, etc., etc. Give them a year. By the time they reach college, yes, they pay. It's downstairs in the office. The tuition fees. I think it's look. I think it comes to a total of like $10,000 a year. It's all described there. You got to see it to believe it, gentlemen. I don't understand their head. There. By the time they start college, they should have been in the Israeli army. Our biggest problem here is the kids go as Meir Lichtenstein said. Rav Meir Lichtenstein. In Israel, the army is the equivalent of the American college, and he's absolutely right. The kid starts college here, finishes Hezda, finishes army, 21, 22, 23, 24. That's when he starts college, 22, basically. Gentlemen, Rabbi Aaron Cutler was a Litvak. He never changed. Idol worship in the Litvish world, it's a non-starter. My greatest shock when I came to Lakewood, and I believe I write about it in Washington, Moshe, check it out. The middle of the shiur, a baron begins, 15 minutes into the shiur, they're shooting at him from the audience, quoting a Rambam. 20 minutes into the shiur, they're maledicting each other. I couldn't believe my ears. I couldn't believe my ears. No, you all know the famous story. How many times have I told you? How did the baron get Rav Dov Schwartzman as a son-in-law? Giving a shiur in Hebron. Dov Schwartzman is sitting there with his feet on the table. The Rosh Yeshiva gets hysterical and he shouts at him, "Das heißt Kavod HaTorah? This is Kavod HaTorah, the way you're sitting?" And Dov Schwartzman shouts back, Beryl Schwartzman shouts back at the Rosh Yeshiva, "Ebe Rosh Yeshiva, you can't learn in the Chopki Gebn Kavod." Ebe the Rosh Yeshiva said, "I'm not, it's in Feltam Arambam, Dachik Nish Gebn Kavod. If the Rosh Yeshiva had to learn, I would give him Kavod. You follow me, Yosef Chaim? But if the Rosh Yeshiva said, "I'm not," and he forgot a Rambam, and he shot a Rambam after Baron, decimated the shear, and Rabbaran came over to him, made one of his big mistakes in life, and said, "Come back to America, marry my daughter." It was apples and oranges. You have to understand. I knew Sarah Meltzer. I knew Sarah Cutler very, very well. She very well. Out what a lady! But she, Taka, should have married a Talmud of the Rav of that period. It would have been a different story altogether. Okay, but that's if. If is the biggest word in the dictionary. But it was a, you know, for Rabban, it was very heartbreaking. The marriage broke up. Listen, it's well known. I don't have to go any further. But this is the Baron Kotla, a Litvak. You spoke with the Rav, the famous story with Jerry Blau. Jerry was in Israel, came back from Israel, Rabbi Blau, a kid. Don't get mad at me for not calling him Rabbi. So one of his questions was, when I introduced Meir Kahana in my book, why I didn't say Rabbi Meir Kahana? I don't believe Meir Kahana had smicha when I met him as a madrich in Bnei Akiva. What am I writing, art scroll? At the age of 13, he got smicha? My madrich. We're not born with titles. You need titles when you're going to the rabbinate. At my age, if I needed a title, and I'm not going to interpret that, you can imagine what I'm saying. That's a fine. Gentlemen, the Rav, Jerry came back. I'm a near witness to this. And after class, we're talking with the Rav and learning, and KBY, everyone was going to KBY already, a few of the brighter kids, KBY. The Rav said, and Rebbe goes, "What Rav do you mean? Who are you talking? Who are you quoting?" He says, "Rebbe, I mean you, so say you." What kind of nanishkeit is this? Rav was hysterical. Rav Hutner? Oh boy. What a change from the Rav Hutner of Warsaw, Berlin, Jerusalem, Talmud of Rav Ravram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook to the Rav Hutner of the 60s into the 70s. Yaakov, he became like a Hasidic icon. And the best article, best survey, best insightful research that Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg of Denver, Colorado ever did is his piece on Rav Hutner. It is fabulous. A very fascinating individual, Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg. We share a lot in common. We're both Talmidim of Rav Lessen, and a very fascinating individual. Read that piece. It's from Slabodka to Berlin. What is it called? I believe that's the name of that book. Slabodka to Berlin. But it appeared originally in Tradition. Fabulous article. Rav Hutter becomes a Hasidic Rebbe. I was at the Kotel. Kabbalat Achron Shel Pesach, Shvi Shel Pesach. Were you there, Frank, that night? I had the sfut. A lot of rabbeim were there. Small rabbeim. Little crowds. For mincha. Aliyah l'regel. Chalamayit. We're getting ready to daven. Yontif davening with the plug. And we see a big crowd coming out. The umption of a rabbi. I recognized him immediately. What a sight. What gadlut. What warmth. What love of every Jew. In a minute, I understood, looking as he's walking, everyone is looking to him for a bracha, and he's walking, not the way I walk straight, quick. He's walking. Bracha. Hundreds of bracha given out. The crowd, that's a Hasidic Rebbe. Hasidic Rebbe, you don't walk out with your back to him. Ein l'chinami. That's the Gemara. The Litvakin can't accept it today. We changed. We found solutions to the Gemara. You all know how to learn. I'm not dealing here with the Din D'Oraita. We're dealing here with the Gemara. We found solutions. Not already learning. Like Rav Taratol, Stadim, Seder. Chassid. Just looking at the Rebbe. Did you ever go to a Fabrenian from the Lubavitcher? It's unbelievable. You know, today I have to go. I mean, I mentioned in class that there's one good thought in this new book on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, that today you can have a Rebbe even though he's no longer alive. That 6:23 on Friday, videos of the Rebbe, you're at a Fabrenian. No, look at the Fabrenian. No one dares eat anything. They're standing thousands holding up little cups of vodka, and the Rebbe's looks around. L'chaim. Thousands are looking at the Rebbe on this side alone. The Rebbe says l'chaim to me. That's a chassid. He drinks. Chassid's a different world. Now you take Rav Hutner and you put Rav Gerelik in front of him. Gerelik is a litvak. He's a Radna. He's a Briska. He's a Litvak through and through. And God by him, American dummies, turn him around and make him walk back in. God have mercy that the world did not cave in. I'm a nice guy. I would have said to him, to these Gabayim, you want me to turn around and walk back in? And walk out backwards? What are you? Lowly, rotten, vicious, malicious, heinous, hideous, whatever the word is, ruthless, depraved, degenerate, debauched, repetitious, malevolent, no good on the arts? Look up the Rambam. Look at the Nosei Kalim. Rebbe Muvhak. Hutner's a great man. He's not my Rebbe Muvhak. Don't make me walk back in. Evidently, they lifted Rabbi Yerucham alapova chamato and threw him back in. Gentlemen.
Well, that story doesn't make sense. Gerelik was such an ordinary character. He would not have just walked back.
All I can tell you is this is.
Did you say that story about yourself?
This is. What? Did I make it up? This is how I know the story.
He told it
to you? Yeah! Not me. He told it to us that Friday, that Shabbos afternoon.
Oh, that's why he was saying.
Yeah, word by word. Gentlemen, there's no question there is a great problem when we start worshiping human beings. It is keneged kol haTorah kula. And Allah had kama v'kama for a Litvak, and this is where we've lost out today. The Litvische Welt has totally disappeared. We are all Hasidim. And to me, as a Litvak, as a dinosaur, it is frightening. And you want the proof that we're all Hasidim? It's very simple. In the 1980s, Rav Shach was ripping apart the Lubavitcher Rebbe, calling him every name in the book. 1 minute later, you meet a Panovitcher Talmud, and he's calling Rav Shach every good name that the Hasidim called the Rebbe. That's Rav Shach. Das Teira never makes a mistake. Infallible. Rav Ovadia Yosef, at one point, rips apart the Lubavitcher Rebbe and calls him, you know, of idol worship, and every 1 minute later you talk to a chassid of Rav Ovadia, you hear every word that he complained or saying about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, they're saying about Rav Ovadia Yosef. Gentlemen, the Hasidic world has conquered all. For me, it is sad, intellectually, emotionally, rationally, Torah-wise, but Rakefer is a man of truth. The Hasidic world has conquered. And as my youngest daughter says to me, Abba, you can't pass it on to the new generation without a little Hasidus today. And you all know how true that is. We need a little song and a little dance and a tish. And whoever heard in the Kippah Struga world now, you have tishin. They don't use the word afabrengen, but you have the word a tish. And I davened Kabbalat Yantuf early the next day, Kabbalat Shabbat in the Shtiblach. I didn't have the strength to walk to the Kotel and back. When I go and it's Cholomayid, my wife drives me to Mamilla, and from there I walk, then I walk back. It's a 40-minute walk back. The last day, Shabbat, my grandsons tell me there's an early minyan in the Shtiblach. Lo and behold, I go to the early minyan. It's a mob scene. Everyone is bothering me. I don't know. I go incognito, but unfortunately for me, people know who I am. I'm getting so many shilas. When can I eat the rice? When can I eat the legumes? Everyone, do I need separate tailing? Did we do the right thing? So number one, I told them 7:35. I still remember the time. 7:35, 25 minutes after sunset. Eat the legumes. Gesunte, hey. Separate kalim, the truth is you don't need separate kalim. It's a truma tadeshin, it's a rishon. If Yosef Chaim eats, then what? We're going to say it's not kosher? Chas v'chalila. But I gave a very intelligent fake answer. Tell me, you come from Chassidim? Yes. Your great-grandparents, your grandparents have knedlach on this Shabbos? Yes. Do they have separate kalim or regular kalim? If they use separate kalim, you have to use separate. If they use the regular, you use regular. So, Baruch Hashem, I can appreciate Hasidus. And I walked out, and I see a mob on the lawn, if you know the Shtiblach, and it's the Sudata, the Meshichata. I have a lot of Torah to say about this. It's not for now. I said, if you go back and listen years ago, when I dealt with this in class, it's Sudata, the Meshichata. There are the Elder Chabad Rebbeim, hundreds around them. And I take a look at the crowd, 90% young men, Chesda graduates, with big kippot srugot, and they willen einzappen from a Hasidische Fabrengen. They want to absorb from a Hasidic event. They are hungry. They're starving. And I'm a very bad teacher of Torah, because if I would be a good teacher, I would begin the shiur with a Hasidic song. I would end the shiur with a Hasidic song. We would dance at the end. Ah, what a joy to teach in Yerushalayim. I'm a bad teacher. I apologize. But ich bin noch a Litvak. But the new generation is taking all. And when you go in to Rabbi Huttner in 10 years' time, please remember, walk out, not backwards, but facing a Hasidic Rebbe. We have to be honest. Gentlemen, we've now come to the high point. What's the greatest tragedy of Das Teira? How has it affected us so negatively? So much aggravation, so much tragedy right here in this country. al admat hakodesh, because of das Torah. When a Rebbe knows it all, when a Rebbe is infallible, when his word is law, when a chassid can tell me on the bus riding home from the Kotel on Tisha B'Av 40 plus years ago, I'll vote whatever the Rebbe will tell me. Gera chassid. You imagine you have 50,000 chassidim, gives you 50,000 votes. Satmar in New York. All that's going on now with the Mitzitza B'Peh. I quoted to you from Avil Yashiv last night. No politician's afraid to take them on because Satmar's 100,000 votes on block. No, if a Rebbe has to make a decision, he needs advice. The Rebbe needs advice. Of course he needs advice, because no Rebbe in the world is going to make a decision on an important issue knows math and knows biology and knows chemistry and knows social economics and social circumstances and knows military strategy. He needs advice. Political reality, all that goes into the modern world. Look at France, look at the elections, look at the runoff, look at this one got this many, and look at the right wing in France. Wow, what a complicated story to explain what happened in France in the vote yesterday. Alaka kama vakama? Life and death issues that face Israel? And here you have a terrible tragedy. There are humans who are learned, who appear pious, and they are no different than Achitofel. This is the tragedy of human existence, the tragedy of Torah. How many times have I given a drasha? Take a look at the greatest miracles. You see it, Mitzrayim. Kriyat Yam Suf. And a minute later, the ego has a half. A minute later, terrible complaints against Moshe Rabbeinu. Why did you take us out? Lamut Bamidbar. We remember the cucumbers and the onions that we ate in Egypt. Masherata Shufka Al Yamsuf Lo Ra'ayeh Cheskel Ben Buzi because you're not Shalom, quoting a Tanchuma. And a Shifcha, imagine Jews what we saw, Gilui Shchina, and a day, 2-3 days later, we're animals again. All right, the Gemara discusses it in Baba Kama Daf Pei. I don't have to tell you Daf Pei Aleph, Pei Bet. This is why we read the Torah every 3 days. Shelo Yechul Gimel Yomim B'li Torah. And this is what the literature world is all about. Without Torah, we can't keep our human dignity, our divine image. Fine. And nevertheless, you can see human beings. Take a look right now in my world. In my world, I have a little contact. I know some of the players. Mizrahi, the Mizrahi people, Bayat Yehudi, what's the other one, Lumi, or whatever their names are. We can't even join one party together. In unity, there is strength. And I asked a chavra of mine who's involved, I don't want to call, let me not mention his name, although there's nothing negative about him. And he's someone that Yitz and I have great respect for. Why are you graduate of Chavra of ours? He's in charge of trying to bring Ichud Lumi and the Bayit Yehudi together. And you know what he answered me? He says to me, Ani, you don't know the hatred that they have for each other. The hatred. And this is frightening. Jews, Torah. What are we concerned with? That hatred. That was his exact word. It's an open Gemara. Brachot Daf Gimel Amud Bet. The beautiful Gemara about David HaMelech and his daily schedule. Kina hayav talui lamala memitato shel David. V'kivin shehigiyo chatzot laila. Baruch Tzvonit, V'noshevet Bo, Menagein Me'alav, Tzizalam Klak, Mayat hayomezo seik b'torah ad shalom utchashacha. And this is true. Gedol Yisrael always woke up early. Always woke up early to learn. That's the story with the Netziv, with Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was a newlywed, and he had married the Netziv's granddaughter, and the Netziv, they were discussing the day before a difficult Rambam, and the Netziv finally came up with an answer, 4 a.m., 5 a.m., he knocks on Reb Chaim's door to tell him the answer, and Reb Chaim has to get out of bed, and he wasn't dressed, and the Netziv shouts at him, they say about you that you're going to be the Gadol Hadar, and this is how late you sleep? No, David HaMelech, the Gadol Hadar. And finally, Kibush Lamedat Shacha, Nichnasu Chachmei Yisrael, Etzlo, Amrlo, Adonenu, HaMelech, Amchai Yisrael, they right away have to deal with contemporary problems. The Jews need Panasa. So, of course, the famous Gemara tells them, Lechu pansuzu mezu, go and do business one from the other. Omrlo, ein ha-koymetz natzbiya tari, v'ein ha-bar mit-malei mi-chuyato. So, you know, and he tells them, go to war. Beat up the other nations. Today, what would we say? We would say, export. Come up with inventions. Our exports are the equivalent in high technology. My grandchildren tell me many of the biggest innovations on all this little phone technology, iPads, whatever else you call it, it's a different world. You walk around and the whole universe is in your hand. Many of the inventions are Israeli. And all right, in those days, they had to go to war. Go to war! Ma miyad yo atzim biyachi tofel. And take a look who's giving the advice, Achitofel. And boy, when Gedol Yisrael, when David HaMelech, Dafsich Amkumen, has to come and plead with Achitofel, give us advice, it's the end of our existence, our pride, our dignity. And all I can tell you, if you want a classic example, and I'll give more in a few minutes, but I want to bring this into more depth, but I'll give you a classic example where I still haven't recovered. You've heard the name Aryeh Deri? Somehow Deri became the Achitofel to Rav Ovadia. He took Rav Ovadia to visit Egypt, to visit Mubarak, and gave a whole shiur to Mubarak how for pikuach nefesh you're allowed to give back part of Eretz Yisrael. If this isn't the advice of Achitofel, I don't know what is. If this isn't the loss of our dignity, our pride, our self-confidence, Ribbono Shel Olam, where are we at? This is the Gadol Hadar in Egypt fawning obsequiously over a Sonei Yisrael. Turns out today that he was only kept in power by the Israelis, and who knows what the Egyptians will finally do to him. But just think for a moment of the scene I describe. We have arrived. Gentlemen, many issues come up on the Israeli scene. A few weeks ago, our dear friend Rav Heschel Schechter was interviewed in a major article that appeared in Olam Katan, Pashat Vayakhel Pekudei. The center of the issue, it's on website as well. Punch in Olam Katan in Google in Hebrew, and you'll be there in a minute. I need not tell you, Rav Heschel, in my humble opinion, and I think I'm absolutely correct, is the most single important Rosh Yeshiva on the YU spectrum today. All right, he has this long interview. He says many controversial matters, My phone doesn't stop ringing. Emails come in from all over. Do I agree? Do I disagree? How could he say this? How could he say that? An issue later, Professor Kami Horowitz writes a rebuttal to one of the thoughts Rav Heschel expresses. Rav Heschel himself defends himself on a different thought he expressed in a, it appears on the YU website, a 13, 14 minute shiur that Rav Heschel gave right before Pesach. I want to deal with one part of this interview where he talks about the Rav and what would be his attitude towards giving back land, making compromises, and of course the Israeli army, Sirif Pekudah, refusing an order. And I just want to tell you that to ask these questions today, I would never respond because the Rav is not here. It's many, many years. It's almost a decade. It's almost a generation and a half since the Rav was last able to be active and express opinions. But these are questions I would not deal with. I also want to state that to ask someone who is not living here and didn't serve in the army about Sirif Pekudah, and I've been asked this question all over America, I tell them, what are you asking me? What kind of question? What does that concern you? What do you understand about Israeli society? I said, there's no bigger right-winger in this room than yours truly, and there's no one more opposed to Sirif Pekudah than yours truly, for one simple reason. If you're going to introduce a concept of Sirif Pekudah, you're going to destroy the Israeli army. The one vehicle that protects us, and Be'ezrat Hashem, with the help of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Hinei Lo Yanum V'Lo Yishon Shomei Yisrael Tate Mashma, as Ben-Gurion answered, at that famous incident in the YU auditorium, we wouldn't be here. I have a problem with the army, not with the army. If I'm going to be Messiah Pekudah, not to evacuate Gush Katif, the Chiloni is going to be, the leftist is going to be Messiah Pekudah, not to move beyond West Jerusalem. He won't walk into East Jerusalem. It's against his principles. I have a problem with what the army did, 100% with the politicians. We are a democracy. The politicians control the army. And I would fight tooth and nail if some of my friends, political leaders, are honest. You have to yell and shout and introduce legislation that it is forbidden for a Jewish army to evacuate Jews from their homes. What are we? God forbid. Nazis, Hitler, wow. No one's more opposed to the evacuation of Gush Katif than yours truly, but Pekudz, Sirif Pekudah. And I want to say, he puts into the Rav that the Rav would be in favor of Sirif Pekudah. I highly doubt that. Even if the Rav hasn't expressed an opinion in 30 years, kind of lo aleinu, I can't believe, knowing Rebbe and knowing his understanding of the Israeli scene and knowing his love of democracy and understanding his fear of fascism and what he saw with the Germans and with the communists, I don't believe the Rav would tell you Sirif Pekudah. I think he would agree with Aaron Rakefet. I don't want to overstate the case, but we have a problem. We have a problem with the politicians. 19, 20-year-old kids don't have to get involved in these issues. They're in an army. They have to take orders. They have to take commands. That's what an army is based upon. It's a miracle that we have an army. Whoever heard of a Jew taking commands? I'm Ksheyoref, as Moshe Rabbeinu said. We're the last people in the world to take commands. We have a miracle here. Don't destroy that miracle, or you destroy the entire state. But there's one thing that Rav Heschel says here, that I made a bracha, baruch shekivanti ledas gedolim, because I want to tell you, I am proud of myself. I reached this conclusion as early as 74, 75. I came in Aliyah greatly influenced by the Rav's thinking. And as you know, Rebbe said right after the Six-Day War that if we can save lives, we should make compromises territorially, that we have to ask the experts, and he compared it, made an analogy to a medical question. Do you fast on Yom Kippur? Don't you fast on Yom Kippur? You have to ask a medical doctor. A Rav does not paskin. A doctor tells the Rav what to paskin. Same thing here. The Rav is interviewed by Mariv, I remember in the early 70s, and he answered exactly the same. We have to ask the military experts, the political experts, and that's how we have to reach a conclusion. I want to tell you, it was shocking for me to discover there is no concept of an expert in the modern world. Every last person is influenced by his own thinking, his own hashkafa, his own outlook, his own philosophy, his own theology, his own Weltanschauung. There is no expert. And I saw that already right after the Yom Kippur War. Every general you spoke to, look at the political party he voted for, and you could absolutely predict what his answer was. People who were left-wing, compromise, no problem, we're safe. People who were right-wing, chas v'chalila, you compromise, you give back land, you give away land, I should say, you endangered the entire yeshiv. There was absolutely no honesty and no expertness. And it's frightening. It's like judges. You go before a judge, you gotta have muscle to go before a judge who thinks the way you do. And we've had case after case in Israel. There's a classic case of a Talmidah of mine, Matar. What's her first name? Ruth Matar, right? Or that's the mother-in-law. No, Nadia Matar. Nadia. She's from Belgium. Was my Talmidah in what do you call it, in Machon Gold. Became a big right-wing activist. And they tried here, the police and the government tried to stomp on her, put her down, and execute her in every way possible. But they ran into a problem. She's married, her husband's a medical doctor, and it's a well-to-do family, an American family. And they had ability to fight the system to get lawyers. And finally, a few years ago, during the withdrawal from Kush Katif, I may not have all the facts exactly right, but I'm 99% online. She called the Jew who was involved in in arranging the evacuation of the homes, and it happened to be a Jew from a religious kibbutz appointed by the government. She called him a capo. She called him a capo. Oh boy, was she arrested, and they brought her before a judge, and they want to throw the book at her and put her away. They don't give a darn that she has children and little children and a husband, and she called them a couple when she insulted a public official. And she had mazel. Could have come before a judge, would have thrown the key away, lock her up. You have morons who were judges too, leftists, haters of religion, worshippers. You have people who were Shomer Shabbos who were judges who worshipped liberalism. You remember who gave the psak that you're allowed to sell chametz on Pesach. You're just not allowed to display it in the public thoroughfare. You're Shomer Shabbos. I know her parents. An absolute moron. New York Times, Harvard, brilliant, sometimes brilliant people are so off the path that they should put them into a special reservation and not let them mingle with normal humans who have to plant Torah in a human context. It's beyond words what you see with brilliance at times. Call them a capo. She had mazel, came before a judge, and the prosecutors just spoken it what you did, and it's terrible, and it's horrible, and we demand that until the trial she be locked up, and we have to go and give it 50 charges. And the judge pulls out the newspaper of that day and says to the prosecutor, tell me, who is the Prime Minister of Israel? And she says, Ehud Olmert. Tell me, wasn't there just a demonstration and a certain young lady called the chief of staff, I said, whoever it was then, Mofaz, called him a murderer, a rotzeach. And the prosecutor says, yes, tell me, can you tell me the name of that lady? And the prosecutor says, yes, it's Olmert's daughter. And the judge says, it's Olmert's daughter. Oh, that's interesting. And she called the chief of staff a murderer. Tell me, did you arrest her? No. Charges dismissed. Shabbat shalom. Go home, young lady. No. Where are we living? What experts? Here I have to tell you, Rav Heschel may or may not be right in attributing to the Rav. He says, the Rav, the Yashkin, political compromise, wasn't the Rav in favor? And Rav Heschel says, absolutely not. He said, check with the experts. But not when the experts have a prejudice, not when the experts contradict each other. And I have to tell you, here I totally, completely, absolutely agree with Rav Heschel. Chas v'chalila, when Achitofel is giving the advice. And I can mention some of the names of the experts you take today. The man who is the most highly decorated soldier in the history of Israel, Barak. Think about this man's Weltanschauung, outlook, commitment, values. This is an expert on life or death situation? Would you go to a doctor who has a record of negligence, who has been sued time and again, who no company wants to give medical insurance to? Well, whatever they call the insurance that a doctor gets, malpractice insurance. This is an expert. I've seen time and again with Rav Ovadia, the Achitofels around him dragging this general and that general and a third general and a fourth general and Ribbono Shel Olam. These are experts. And Rabbanim have to make decisions and they're ex cathedra on the basis of these Achitofels. Chas v'chalila. And gentlemen, those who follow this concept of Das Torah have a long history where they practically have never made the right decision. You take the state of Israel, could you imagine our good at Israel? We've said this so many times and I say it again in context. Opposed to sovereignty before Mashiach. Could you imagine Harry Goodman of London, who spoke the King's English before there was a Queen, would testify before every committee, League of Nations, Peel Commission, Anglo Committee, whatever they called it. Time and again, they bring over people from Agudat Israel who couldn't speak English, and he would testify against Jewish sovereignty. Let Eretz Yisrael remain under the British protectorate. Do not grant Jewish sovereignty. Where would we be today? Where would the Jewish people be today after Hitler? Where would we be? Look at the schut sitting in this room. There are endless, endless Anglos who came in Aliyah. The biggest mitzvah of all, mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz. Look at the Rambam, Sefer Mitzvah. Look at the Gemara and Ketuvot at the end. Look at the Yerushalmi and Ketuvot. Where would we be? But you see, the Ribbono Shel Olam was kind to Harry Goodman. I don't believe he has a descendant who doesn't wear a kippah srugah and doesn't serve in the Israeli army. But what a decision. What a mistake. You all know, we've quoted this many times, so much opposition to the state of Israel. So much opposition to the Hakamat HaMedina. You all know what happened in 48. It was beyond words. indescribable. And you have to give people, ask me, charedim, dialogue with me. I don't want to use the word debate. I haven't lost a debate yet in my life with them. But B'ezrat Hashem, we're not infallible. One day we'll lose. Halavai. Halavai. But dialogue with me. What happened here? Heyiya. What's the big day? Heyiya. Why Heyiya? You know, it's not like Hanukkah happened or Purim happened where you have an exact day. What happened? I said, what happened? Ben-Gurion had the guts to stand up to the American State Department and declare a state of Israel. That is the greatest miracle that we have, Alat Mata Kodesh in modern times. I don't believe Netanyahu, with his government, with Barak, would have the guts to stand up to the American State Department. You just think for one moment. And everyone was advising Ben-Gurion, don't do it, don't do it, and stood up and declared a state. Neis gadol hayapo behe'iya. And now I'll tell you a story that you'll never forget. And I'll give you the source of the story. Someone raised in the right-wing world, a very famous rabbi, should live and be well, not a youngster today, Rabbi Joseph Grunblatt of Forest Hills. You've heard the Moshets. You're davening in a shul. Beautiful. I heard this story from him in Flatbush on Tisha B'Av, 1991. We were speaking at the same program. Those days, I yet spoke on a fast day. Today, I will not speak, not on Yom Kippur and not on Tisha B'Av. I tell everyone I have to rest and get through the fast. I just don't have the energy of youth. Could you imagine a rabbi, your hottest days in the rabbi, no boy, Joseph Chaim is going to faint. Forget about the tension now, the tension of the rabbinate. Your hottest days, Yom Kippur, Halavai Tisha B'Av should also be a hard day. You should be in a shul that they know Tisha B'Av exists. In Atlanta, Georgia, I'm not so certain they know Tisha B'Av exists. But in Flatbush, they know. And he told an unbelievable story. He learned in the Beit Medrash Elyon in Spring Valley at that time. Beit Medrash Elyon, you all know Mr. Shraga Feivelman, the Lovage, had many fabulous innovations for Torah. One of them was the Kollel he organized as a shoot-off of Torah V'Das in Spring Valley. I can actually say that the organization of the Beis Medrash Elyon in Spring Valley becomes the jumping board that leads to Muncie. In other words, Spring Valley and Muncie are one community, basically. And the Beis Medrash Elyon went there, and it attracted B'nai Torah, and the B'nai Torah started moving into Muncie. And I need not tell you, Muncie today is an Ir Ve'Ein B'Yisrael, although it still doesn't have sukkahs. It's still a sakonet nefashet to walk along the streets of Muncie. Well, he's learning in Beis Medrash Elyon, and the state of Israel is declared. And it was declared late Friday afternoon in Tel Aviv, right? They rushed to declare it to give everyone a chance to go home for Shabbos, because there were ministers who were showing the Torah mitzvah, the Mizrahi and the Aguda people. And he comes into Beis Medrash Elyon. They already knew the news in America Friday morning. And he comes in Friday morning to learn the Friday morning Seder. And there's this alta Yudapeisha Talmud walking up and down, and he's in a state of absolute shock. And he says, "Wie kann das sein, Rabbi Baruch Ber hat uns angesagt, sie wird nicht sein, sie wird nicht treffen, sie wird nicht sein, a jüdische Malucha. Famashiach, wie kann das sein?" And the guy is in a state of trauma and shock, walking up and down. Translation, how can it be? Rabbarach Be'er Labor, which the great Kamenetzer Rosh Yeshiva. Moshe, if you don't know about Rabbarach Be'er, read Rakafet Aaron Chelik Aleph. There's a monograph on him. And Rabbarach Be'er promised us, told us, there will never be a state of Israel with Jewish sovereignty before Mashiach. And Nebuch, this poor individual, was in total shock. You can ask Rabbi Grunblatt if he knows what happened to him. Did he retain his faith or did he lose it all? Who knows? He didn't say. He just told this story. What a frightening, frightening story. Ephraim, you ready for more? You played a role in this. Gentlemen, these are Gedolei Yisrael, these are giants. But they're only mortals. You have your logic, you have your thinking, you have your Weltanschauung. I'm going to come to this in great detail and show you a Rambam in a few weeks' time. A very important lecture, an attitude towards Charedim. A lecture that obligates us. We are obligated to set an example. These are Gedolei Yisrael. Yitzchak can't differentiate. I love Gedolim and I love Torah and I have Emunat Chachamim. They're not infallible. They fought this way. Not yet. Let me tell you.
There's a difference between Talmidei Chachamim and Shemad and Shalom. A Talmid Chacham who is a man who has acquired great knowledge, or a man who is imbibed great knowledge.
Believe me that Reb Baruch Be'er and Reb Baron Kotler, I'm going to talk about in a second, tried to be Mabish Shalom. It's not the Satma Rebbe. The Satma Rebbe already, there was a distinctive concept of enmity there. These people had no enmity, but this is the way they grew up. I remember telling Reb Baron Kotler, Yaakov, you're sitting, I'm telling Reb Baron Kotler in a private discussion, he loved me, what can I tell you? Did you study Rakaf et Aaron? I tell you what, not Rakaf et Aaron, did you study Washington? I tell you how I met my meeting him in the house, and it's history. Anyway, I remember telling him about Bnei Akiva, how much I gained from it. So Rabbi said to me, Abba, but this is noch nicht der Emes. It's not the ultimate truth. That's what he said to me. From his point of view, I understand it. That he was wrong? Absolutely. 100%. That I revere him? 1,000,000%. Try to understand that. Gentlemen, I'm now going to reveal a secret that I never thought I'd reveal, but once it's on the website, everyone knows. In Torah Vadas, there was a lot of politics. Ultimately, among Jews, there's always politics. No one escapes. I have to give YU credit that YU is a public institution and the politics is minimal compared to other places. I have to give credit. There are problems in YU, there are problems. But you got to give YU credit for what it is. And a kid like Arnie Rothkopf can be a Magid Shia because, all right, all on his own merits. It's not family or Echveis political intrigue. Torah Vadas, there was a lot of politics, and there was Rav Gedalia Shoah. You've all heard the name, I trust. And Rav Gedalia Shoah's brother-in-law ultimately had to leave Torah Vadas. There was too much anti-Rabbi Shoah feeling with the whole Machlokes, with Rav Kamenetsky, with the Ben Gedalia, with Torah Vadas. This history will never be written because the Torah world of art scroll does not want to write truth or cannot write truth or feels it's forbidden to write truth. No, it could be it's forbidden. I don't know. So he came to YU and he taught. The day I started giving a shiur in YU, Rabbi Isby started giving a shiur. So we came very close, quite close. So Rabbi Isby, I could just see the Zichrono Levracha, he was rabbi of the Einstein College of Medicine synagogue too. So I could just see Rabbi Isby, I could see the look on his face. And we were talking about Rabbi Aaron Kotler and Rav Gedalia Shoah. You know, Rav Gedalia Shoah was an American, they came to a, I think he was American born. I think he ties into Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right or wrong? And he was an Adam Gadol, and he went to Europe and he studied with Rav Aaron Kotler in Kletz, Rav Isby shows me a Xerox of a letter, and he says, "This is dynamite." He says to me, "I just see the look. This is dynamite." He's shaking the letter, and he says, "If we would publish this letter, you don't know what a storm." But the family keeps it quiet. No, lo and behold, and I have to thank Ephraim for sending me the information. The Hamodia published the whole story about the letter, and Parshat Chukat 2009, the Hamudia magazine, because Modia is Hasidic and they're out to give a shtach to put a pin into the Litvaken. Well, they published it. And the story is very frightening. 1939, I don't have to tell you, I'm now reading a memoir of, I think, I don't know if I mentioned here, mentioned elsewhere, I'm reading a memoir of Penina Weiss of that year in Poland. She was married to Professor Avraham Weiss of Bernard Revel Graduate School. Didn't we speak about it, or we spoke about it coming back from the cult? I forget already. Anyway, it's a privately published memoir. It's translated from English into Hebrew by her daughter, who was a classmate of Judy Malka, the same crowd, Tzipora Ora Weiss. And what a memoir. So I don't have to tell you, you know, no one could believe what was happening. So, and no one could believe the Nazis. Again, I've said this so many times, that World War I, the Nazis were gentlemen. When they conquered Poland, when they conquered parts of White Russia, everyone respected them. They conquered parts of Lithuania. They were gentlemen. They didn't hurt Jews. There were many Jews in the German army. The German chaplains, the Jewish chaplains came in and helped the yeshivat. So in World War II, you know, no one could realize what was happening. So Gedalia sure doesn't want to leave Kletsk. He and his wife are learning there. They don't want to leave Kletsk. And his father is hysterical, and then his father tells him, the State Department has told me, if you don't leave Kletsk, they cannot guarantee your life. So he packs up. It was the summer, right before the Nazis move into Poland, and he sells his furniture, gives his furniture away, leaves a letter for Baron Cutler, because he ran, it was Mamish Bein Hasmanim, and he's now heading for the boat. Baron comes back from wherever he was on Dacha, the period they rest, comes back to Kletsk, and he gets the letter, and he writes a letter to Rav Gedalia Shor and his wife. That's the letter Louis Isby showed me, Rabbi Isby. That's the letter that appeared, that was discussed and summarized in Hamudia. And in the letter, Rabaran writes, my dear Talmud, you're making a bad mistake. Nothing is going to happen. There will be no war. We are perfectly safe. Come back to Kletsk as soon as you can. Don't leave for America. And I personally will buy back your furniture so that you'll have furniture and have an apartment. There is nothing to worry about. With all good wishes, with his signature, Reb Aaron Cutler. Gentlemen, I don't think one added word is necessary. Das Torah is not a Torah concept. It crept in for perhaps good positive reasons, but it also has many negative connotations. A person has to think, a person has to stand on his own two feet, a person can never let Achitofel interfere with us and give advice to Gedolei Yisrael. Gentlemen, thank God that Rav Gedalia Shor didn't listen to Reb Aaron Cutler. And you know something? The story is even sadder than you think, because he already was on the boat when the letter tried to catch up with him. He ultimately doesn't see the letter until many, many weeks later. Could you imagine, had he gotten the letter before he left Europe, before he boarded the boat, who knows if he wouldn't have listened to Reb Aaron Cutler, turned around, Das Torah, and you know what the end of the story would have been. So I reiterate, we still have more to do. Yitzchak, did I keep my word? I said I'll reach Das Torah. Remember, you bothered me 3 years ago and 2 years ago. And I said I would reach it. Baruch Hashem. Don't misunderstand it. Love of Torah, absolutely. Love of Talmidei Chachamim, absolutely. Love of people who devote their entire being not to making money, not to conquering the world, but to Kedusha and Tara and inspiring, absolutely. Without such people, we have no future. It's the most important profession. I quote the Rav. A Rebbe is more important, to use the Rav's words, a warlord, a king, a high priest. A Rebbe? But we are all human beings, and we have to acknowledge it. And it affects our thinking and how we should act. So what did we do today?
If I may ask,
yeah.
About Kotler, how was he saved?
Oh, Rabbi Aaron Kotler, I write about it in the Suvi era. The Var Hatzala was able to get the State Department to agree to allow certain leading Rabbonim to get to America. A few. So then there was a whole question who to bring. Rabbi Aaron Kotler was not that famous yet in 39-40. But they made the decision that an elder Rosh Yeshiva who was world famous would not have the energy that Rav Aaron had. And that's how they chose Rav Aaron, and he comes to San Francisco. He sails, I think it's from Japan, to San Francisco. San Francisco, he goes cross country on a train, reaching New York, and the rest is history. It's all described in the Silver Era. And right now, I'm negotiating Yaakov Feldheim. Right now, I have to check that the office sent out what he wanted, my original contract. It's taken a giant step forward. Thank God. I'm still not finished, but Nikavelitov. Gentlemen, it's a very, what I said today, I could have said a lot more and a lot more emotion. It's a frightening topic. Just think for a minute. If we didn't have a state of Israel, where we would be. And I'm not saying it because this week is Yom HaTzmut. I'm saying it because this is the reality. Where would the Jewish people be? The whole reawakening. Many of you are Balei Tshuva, a second generation Balei Tshuva. Just think what brought you back to your people. If not for the state of Israel, where would we be? But nevertheless, the truth has to be spoken. The Gemara in Shabbos, it's very frightening to me to sing Su Sharim Reshechem on a bus of a gum. The song that was written, Yamim Al Yamim Yosifu, is a lot better. Take my word for it. That's a beautiful song. We pray that Gedol Yisrael should have a long life. The Gemara in Brachat, not davening in back of the Rebbe, I think we don't need too much of an explanation. The advisors, Achitofel, I never saw a more powerful Gemara and a more truthful Gemara. Wow, what we have gone through in life as Jews, as proud Jews, because of Achitofel's lowlifes who get involved in politics, who manipulate, who are brilliant but evil at the same time. I can tell you on this Achitofel who brought Mubarak and then Rav Ovadia and the other things he did that are beyond description, a book has just now come out with every accusation in the world about him. It is frightening. And this is a book written by a reporter from the newspapers who, remember, there's libel in this world. Every word he has to stand on, or there's endless libel litigation that can begin. And nevertheless, the book is out, and the book is a bestseller, and my daughter already bought it and is reading it, and she said she's going to charge me for the privilege of reading it. So I'm looking forward to see, but I've read already the reviews. Baruch Hashem, it is dynamite. Okay. And historically, this Shita has totally proven itself incorrect on every major decision. And the examples I gave, the story from Rabbi Yosef Grunblatt, is overpowering. The story on Rabbi Aaron Kotler is beyond words. And I laughed with that story because I knew Rabbi Yisbi very well, and I can just see him with that devilish look in his eyes, holding the letter in front of me and telling me, ah, this letter, if we would publish it, it would be an explosion. Gentlemen, a few freebies. Does anyone need a beautiful venture with Zmira, everything in it, from AACI boat tours for wealthy people? Does anyone have a little bit, take two already? What are you taking? One, you have a wife, you have children. Does anyone need the Lubavitcher? These are letters from the Rebbe about Pesach. Very, very nicely done. You got to remember, the Rebbe was Gadol Mirabim Shemo. Don't judge him by his Hasidim who have disgraced his memory. Does anyone want a copy of the Heschel Schechter, Rabbi Schechter interview? Yeah. Here are two copies of Olam Katan, and here's the response of Professor Carmi. Now, here, okay, gentlemen, I see I don't have, okay, 1 second. This is for you, Ephraim, that's the source I told you. Okay, now 1 second, I see we have more than, have you seen the latest tradition? No, okay, so here's one for you. Yitzchak, that one you share with your people, okay? Okay, share this with your people. And Danny, I'm giving you this. Anyone in the Kol, if you want more copies, I'll make more. You tell me, okay? And finally, again, I offer our Torah. It's amazing how you fellas don't appreciate something in modern Hebrews. Shela t'tshuvat halakha l'maisa. It has a Sephardic overtone, but it's quite fair to Ashkenazim as well. And finally, I want to extend a big mazel tov to Michael Weissman, Mordechai Weissman, who has gone back. And this is the young couple in Baltimore. What I love, if I understand the story correctly, this is a real shidduch. He didn't know the girl. He was introduced to her via the website. They spoke to each other via the computer. He went back to meet her, and what was it, 1 week later, they were engaged. And I have news for you. To quote the Rav, when the Rav had an informal session on dating, it's recorded. This is the early 70s. There was a grant for it, and sex, and marriage. So the Rav was talking about the beauty of Shidduchim, and he said, I don't know, I think the Shidduch system was more successful than when you go out and try to find mates on your own. Until we meet again in health and happiness, a very meaningful Yom HaZikaron and a very happy Yom HaTzmud. Das V'danya.